Then, in the rest of section 6, Aristotle kind of launches into this, not tirade, but he gives us some more reasons to disregard Plato's use of the forms. And there's some interesting things to say in there, but we've already looked at a pretty decent argument, one more famous argument against those form things. So think about those arguments that Aristotle gives in section 6 if you want, but I'm going to go ahead and skip ahead to section 7, because section 6 is basically a digression to argue against his teacher and buddy Plato. And 7, we get back to, let us again return to, the good we are seeking and ask what it can be. That was the main track of discussion we were on, so let's get back to that, skipping forward to section 7. It seems different in different actions and arts. It is different in medicine, in strategy, and in the other arts likewise. And then, is the good of each? Surely that for whose sake everything else is done. In medicine, this is health. In strategy, victory. In architecture, a house. And in any other sphere, something else. And in every action and pursuit, the end. For it is for the sake of this that all men do whatever else they do. Therefore, if there is an end for all we do, this will be the good achievable by action. So, back to this whole end thing, this whole goal thing, this notion that everything is moving towards some goal. This is really key in Aristotle. And it's not only present here and important here in Aristotle's ethics, it's also a big part of Aristotle's metaphysics. We're not going to get into Aristotle's metaphysics. Of course, we would talk about such a thing in a regular intro class. But in this, we have this notion of this kind of teleological, what we could call a teleological viewpoint. This idea that things all have a telos, that is a goal, an end point, towards which they're working. Now, as we've seen several times before, this is really important for Aristotle. And he comes back to it here. So he's saying, okay, there's all these other things that we're pursuing, and they're goals that they have, so if we can understand the overall goal, then we can understand the good. So, the argument... This long argument that we've had about happiness has, by a different course, reached the same point. We must try to state this even more clearly. Since there are evidently more than one end, and we choose some of these for the sake of something else, clearly not all ends are final ends, but the chief good is evidently something final. Therefore, if there is only one final end, this will be what we're seeking. Now, we call that which is in itself worthy of pursuit more final than that which is worthy of pursuit for the sake of something else, and that which is never desirable for the sake of something else more final than things that are desirable both in themselves and for the sake of that other thing, and therefore we call final without qualification that which is always desirable in itself and never for the sake of something else. This is a fancier way of saying what was said before. There are some things that are desirable for other reasons, subordinate reasons, and there are some things that are desirable perhaps for their own sake, and happiness seems to be this thing. So we started with a general verbal agreement that happiness was the answer to the question. Then we recognized a lot of different things that happiness wasn't, but through various argumentation and reasoning, we come to conclude that despite happiness not being the things that we commonly think it to be, it's still the right answer, right? Happiness is still the answer to the question, the correct answer to the question, what is the good? Because we choose this thing for itself and never for the sake of something else. Honor, pleasure, reason, every virtue, we choose those for themselves sometimes, but we also choose them for the sake of happiness. Okay, so happiness then is the answer to the question. Happiness is the good. Great. Fair enough. awesome. But we still haven't figured out what this thing is. I'm going to skip down a paragraph now. Happiness is something final and self-sufficient. It is the end of action. But there was already general verbal agreement about happiness being the good. So to say that happiness is the chief good seems a platitude. And a clearer account of what it is still desired. This might perhaps be given if we could first ascertain the function of man. Key point here, if we could ascertain the function of man. Just as for the flute player, a sculptor, or an artist, and in general for all things that have a function or activity, the good and the well is thought to reside in the function. So it would seem to be for a man, if he has a function. Well, have a carpenter and the tanner certain functions or activities, and has man none? Are we born with no function? Or is eye, hand, foot, and in general, each of the parts evidently has a function? May one lay it down that man similarly has a function apart from all these? What could that be? There's a function that we have, it seems he's saying here. And if we could understand what that function is, then we're pretty much a lot closer to understanding what this happiness is. Life is common even to plants, right? That's not our function, because all living things share that. Okay, so we should exclude life of nutrition and growth. What about the life of perception? But that also is common to horses and oxes and animals. Those animals perceive the world too. There remains then an active life of the element that has a rational principle. Of this, one part has such a principle in the sense of being obedient to one, the other in the sense of possessing one and exercising thought. And as the life of the rational element also has two meanings, we must state that life in the sense of activity is what we mean. There might be a little bit of familiarity here. This separating of the self into different parts. Life is common even to plants. Maybe that's reminiscent of the appetitive part that Plato talked about. And perception, and driven by basic kinds of emotions and things like that. Well, I mean, you know, you might think that your cat or your dog gets mad or afraid or some different kinds of feelings sometimes. Maybe sort of like Plato's spirited part. And then there's this thing that only we have, says Plato and Aristotle, the rational part. Maybe Aristotle was just a little influenced by his teacher here. Eneas does disagree with him quite a bit, but this sounds pretty reminiscent of some of the things that Plato was saying. But anyway, I digress. So, if the function of man is an activity of the soul which follows or implies a rational principle, and if we say so-and-so and a good so-and-so have a function which is in the same kind, e.g. means, for example, a lyre and a good lyre player, and so without qualification in all cases, eminence and respect of goodness being added to the name of the function. For the function of a lyre player is to play the lyre, and that of a good lyre player to do so well. If this is the case, and we state that the function of man to be a certain kind of life, and this to be an activity or actions of the soul, implying a rational principle, and the function of a good man to be the good and noble performance of these, and if any action is well performed when it's performed in accordance with the appropriate excellence, if this is the case, human good turns out to be activity of the soul in accordance with virtue. Well, there we go. There we go. So, okay, let's go back for a second and explain this a little bit further. So he's saying, okay, we're looking for the function of man. And it's got to be something with something to do with rationality. And if we're thinking about functions, we have to understand functions and good functions. So there is a function that a lyre player has. It's to play the lyre, right? There's a function that a doctor has. It's health, right? There's a function that all sorts of things have. So we say there's a lyre player or a doctor, and we can also say there's a good lyre player or a good doctor. And what we mean when we say someone is a good lyre player is that they perform their function well. And what we mean when we say someone is a good doctor is that they perform their function well. Okay. We are humans. We're people. So we have a function. If we are to be good humans, good people, that must mean we have to perform our function well. So what does it mean to perform our function well? Well, if any action is well performed when it's performed in accordance with the appropriate excellence, that means that human good turns out to be activity of our human soul in accordance with virtue. Hey, okay. So this good, this happiness, turns out to be human activity of the soul in accordance with virtue. Of course, then he adds, we must add in a complete life, for one swallow does not make a summer, nor does one day, and so too one day, or a short time, does not make a man blessed and happy. So this serves as an outline of the good. Now, this is important. This is important because we have to recognize that we haven't just got now an understanding of being a good person. We also have an answer to that question we were asking with respect to Plato. Why do we care about virtue? Why do we care about being good? What's our motivation? And we saw the answer for Plato was, well, being virtuous gives us the best chance at coming to understand this form of the good. But of course, we know Aristotle can't answer the question in the same way because Aristotle doesn't buy into the whole form thing. But now we have our answer. Aristotle obviously cares about virtue as well, but our answer to the question of what's our motivation is being virtuous gives us the best shot at being happy. Hey, happiness is a result of acting in accordance with virtue. So we have to understand happiness in a particular way. And this may be a little different, a little off or separate from the way that you may commonly be thinking about happiness. Because again, happiness for Aristotle clearly isn't just pleasure. We have to understand the importance of this seemingly off-the-cuff comment, almost a throwaway comment, but it's extremely important. We must add, in accordance with virtue, in a complete life. Now, what does that mean? Well, what it seems to mean is you don't get to just do one virtuous thing or a couple of virtuous things or be virtuous for just a minute or two or a little while and then happiness is your reward. No, happiness is what happens when you live your complete life in accordance with virtue. You got to live this complete life in accordance with virtue. So happiness being, as he says, a kind of excellence, means that we shouldn't think of happiness as just, oh, I had a really good day today, or that was really fun, or something like that. We should think of happiness more as excellence, happiness as this kind of state of flourishing. And for that reason, it's perhaps useful to think about the original Greek word that Aristotle uses. The Greek word that Aristotle uses for happiness is eudaimonia. And eudaimonia is, EUDAIMONIA, eudaimonia, is happiness, but it's not just I feel good happiness, or I had a good day happiness, or I have a lot of money happiness. Eudaimonia is this kind of complete whole life excellence and flourishing. So one of the best kind of ways I can describe it, of course, this isn't the only way to think about it, but it's one of the easier examples I can think of to kind of describe this kind of happiness. Happiness, the eudaimonia kind of happiness, is like, imagine you are on your deathbed and you are reflecting, looking back on your life. So you're sitting there and you know you don't have long, and you're kind of reflecting on the life you've led, and you're sort of thinking to yourself, yeah, that was good. That was a good, well-lived life. That kind of ease, that satisfaction, that contentment that you'll feel in that situation, that's the kind of happiness that Aristotle's talking about. It's that sense of well-being, that sort of sense of a virtue and so on flowing throughout yourself. Now, of course, this does not mean that in order to achieve this, you must never have made any mistakes. You must never have done anything wrong. No, I mean, that's ridiculous. We're human. We mess up. All of us mess up. I know I sure have. I've messed up before. Multiple times. Sometimes fairly serious mess ups. I'm sure you have too. And if you haven't, get ready, because you absolutely will. You're going to mess up, and you're going to mess up in your life not just once, and you're also going to mess up in your life not just mildly. You're going to have at least one or two major mess-ups in your life. That's just part of being human. But if you have grown from those mess-ups, if those mess-ups have set you on the more proper virtuous path, hey, that's not a bad thing. So again, this happiness, this eudaimonia that Aristotle wants us to achieve, says is our goal to achieve, is best and really only achieved through being a virtuous person. Being a vicious person, someone ruled by vice, is not going to experience that. They may feel like they don't care. They may feel like they have had a good life, but it's not going to be the same. It's going to be an empty happiness, which of course doesn't amount to happiness at all. True happiness, eudaimonia happiness, only results from activity of soul in accordance with virtue in a complete life. So, what I'd like you to do then is kind of reflect on this a little bit, kind of think about you know, what this means and whether or not you think this is a good answer. There's a couple more things to say about the nature of virtue and so on, but I want to kind of stop here, because at this point at least, because this is kind of a big claim that Aristotle's making, and we can see how, of course, virtue is important, right? But just like Plato, but it's important in a very different way. The motivation, right? The motivation for why we should be virtuous is very different. And of course, the answer to the question, what is the good, is very different between Aristotle and his teacher, Plato. So think about this. Think about how What do you think about this claim that Aristotle has made? What do you think about everything that's been said so far in these few sections of the Nicomachean Ethics that we have discussed?